Okay, today's daf is Pesachim daf Vav. We're the top of Vav Amud Aleph, and we're in the middle of discussing what exactly constitutes possession for needing to get rid of chametz. Ba'u miname Rava, behemat arnona, chayavet b'chora, o en chayavet b'chora. If you have a group of animals that's subject to the property taxes taken by the governing body, the non-Jewish governing body, does a firstborn animal, still have the kedushat bechor that needs to go to a kohen, or not, because it's partially owned by a non-Jew by dint of their rights to a portion, a tax of those animals, and it's partially owned by a non-Jew, then it's not going to be chayav and bechor. Right now, we have no question that it's going to be chayav in the event that if you know they came knocking at your door for the tax, instead of giving them the animal, you can just give them money opposite the animal, and then really their ownership is not on the animal. Their ownership is really just a monetary consideration. That's like that the animal is just backing up, right? But when you can just dismiss him with money, then obviously the animal is not really considered in the non-Jew's possession, and therefore you're chayav mechor. So our question is, if you can't just turn him away with money, right, that he actually has a right, a claim to the animal itself, that's what we're asking, because then he seems to have partial possession. My Amarlu Ptura. So what's the din there? Pater, right? It's not Chayv Mechor. Vatanya. Didn't we learn an explicit Breita Chayevet? That it'd be Chayv Mechor. Hatam Dematzi Misalakeh. Yeah, that Breita was talking about when you can turn him away with money. Meaning he didn't really have possession of the animal. He was just after the money. Yigida Amri. Amarava Behemart Arnona Ptura Mina Bechora. Those who say the following, right? Those who teach the teaching in the following manner. That the animal that belongs to property tax, animal that's subject to property tax, from the government is pater from Bechor, because it's partially owned by a non-Jew. And even if you can, turn him away with money, still, it's going to be pater. However, when it comes to dough that is subject to tax from the government, that is still chayev and chala. Now you'd assume, isn't it kind of similar? Well, if the bechor is a portion of your animals, so you have to give the kohen, and the chala is a portion of the bread that you have to give to your kohen. So if the bechor is partially owned by a non-Jew and then is therefore pater, then the bread should be partially owned by a Jew, and therefore also pater. But here, no, we're saying chayav. And even, by the way, even if you cannot turn him away with just money, meaning he's an actual right to the bread itself, to the dough itself, still, it's going to be chayav in chala. My time, what's the reason for this distinction? Behema eat lakala, isa let lakala. By behema, there's a reputation on who knows it. It's publicly, generally, who owns it. Sorry, it's publicly known by an animal who owns this animal. In which case, the non-Jew's hold on it is much more established. But when it comes to just dough, there's no established possession over the dough by the non-Jew. If a non-Jew comes into the chatzer of a Jew holding dough, the Jew does not have to go get rid of that dough. It's not his job to burn it. If Gido, it's low zakulvar. However, if he stored it away with the Jew, then he has to get rid of it. Yichid lo bait in zakulvar shneimar lo yimatze. However, if you set aside a distinct home place for the non-Jew for the non-Jew to have unique access to, that he keeps his dough, then you don't have to. Then you don't have to burn it, as the Torah says, it should not be found by you. My kamar, how is that pasuk, it should not be found, telling you that you don't have to burn it in that case? I'm Rav Papa Areshakai. No. Because the question of the pasuk, Shenemar lo yimatze, is actually going on the resha, the hachikamar, and this is how it should read. If Kido etzlo, zakh luvar, Shenemar lo yimatze. It's not a comment on giving him the private home, right? Because it says lo yimatze, but because it gives him a private home, that's fine, right? It's a comment on if he stores it in your possession, you have to be mevayer because it's lo yimatze, right? Rav Ashi, Amar Lilo Masefikai. Rav Ashi says, no, actually, this Lo Yimatze is talking about the latter part of that teaching, right? And this is how it should be read. V'achik Amar Yichod Lo Bayit In Zok Lvar, right? If you set aside a home for him, you do not need to burn it. Shnei Amar Lo Yimatze Bebateichem. Because it says that it should not be found in your home. V'ha Lavdi Dehu. The Goy Kikamayel Levetan and Avshikamayel. And this home that you set aside for his dough is not yours, because the non-Jew would go in there alone to to bring in the dough and take it out. So it's in his possession, not in yours, so it doesn't constitute the lo yumatzav b'teichem. Lememer the schirut kanya, is that to say that renting out a property is a valid acquisition of the property? Even when you can rent out property to non-Jews, in the areas that you can rent out property to non-Jews, you still shouldn't rent it out as a home. You could rent it as a storage facility, but not a home. Why? Because we're concerned that they're going to bring in idols, right? And if you think that renting out is a valid acquisition, then who cares if he's bringing in idols? He's bringing an idol into his home, not into your home. Must be that we don't really see that the fact that you rented out to him to mean that it's considered his, right? Because you still have to be concerned for the idol worship that's going on in the home you're renting out. Right? Shani hacha, no. We have to distinguish between the case of renting out for the sake of idol worship and renting out for the sake of storing chametz. Shani hacha, de apke rachmana b'lashon le'yimatzeh, masha matzu b'yarcha, yatzeh she'ena matzu b'yarcha. Because the restriction that the Torah put upon it was it should not be found with you. In which case, it only falls on possessions that are actively at that time found with you, right? But a home that you're renting out is still technically your possession. However, it's not found with you because you don't have just immediate access to it because the renter has access to it. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Motzei Chametz Beito B'Yom Tov, Kofeh Alav Tekli. Right? If you find, what if you happen to find chametz in your home on Yom Tov, right? You can't burn it. Just put a vessel over it, hide it. Amar Rav Im Shalek Deshu Enu Tzarech. And if it's from if it's hektish, if it belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu, we made it hektish for the Beit Hamikdash. You don't have to cover it up. My time. Why would we differentiate between those two? Why don't you have to cover it up? Because people generally separate themselves from hektish. People don't instinctively go for hektish food and eat it. They understand it's not theirs. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, chametz shel goy, so lechitzas sarat tzvachim shumeker. And if you find the chametz, when it comes to the chametz of a non-Jew in your home, but you don't have authority over it, it's not your possession. So you have to make a certain mechitza there, so you recognize this is not your chametz. And it's fine. You have to make a mechitza there to separate between your domain and the chametz of the non-Jew, v'im shel hektish, and ritzarech. However, it belongs to a hektish, you don't have to make such a mechitza. My time will be double in shevi nei. Same reason. Because you habituate yourself to separate from chametz. However, this chametz that's not hektish, that belongs to the non-Jew, you may come to accidentally eat it. That's why you need the mechitza to remind yourself. The Amar of Yehuda Amarav, ha mifarish v'hayyote b'shayra, kodem shloshim yom, ein zakuk levayr. Tov shloshim yom, zakuk levayr. Okay, if someone sets sail or leaves in a caravan before 30 days, before Chag HaPesach, so Purim time, right, you don't need to burn that chametz. You don't need to burn your chametz. However, if you leave within 30 days, you already are obligated to do the biur chametz before you leave. Amar Abaye had Amar Tov Shloshim Yom Zakuk Levar Lo Amran Elish Datu Lachzor Val Ein Datu Lachzor Zakuk Levar. That which we said within 30 day period that you have to burn the chametz, that's only if you intend on coming back during Pesach. However, if you don't intend on coming back during Pesach, then you don't have to do the biur chametz at all. Amar Le Rava V'Ei Datu Lachzor Afilim Rosh Hashanah Nami. Rava says no, that cannot be. If you're coming back in the middle of Pesach, such that you're going to have chametz in your possession on Pesach that you have access to, then you can be leaving on Rosh Hashanah, you would still have to do the biur chametz, right? Obviously, we cannot be talking about where you're coming back on Pesach. You don't have to do the biur chametz. Absolutely not. Ela amar Rava. Rather, Rava explains the halacha as follows. Had amar kodem shloshim yom en zakuk levayr lo amran ela she'ein dato lachzor aval dato lachzor afilim Rosh Hashanah zakuk levayr. Right? That which we said that before... That which we said, that if you leave before 30 days, before Pesach, you don't have to burn the chametz. That's only talking about if you're also not coming back during Pesach. However, if you're coming back during Pesach, even you leave on Rosh Hashanah, you have to do the biur chametz, right? So just to be clear, if you're leaving within 30 days before Pesach, even if you're not coming back for Pesach, like you're going to a hotel, you're going to some Pesach trip, whatever it is, you still have to do biur chametz before you leave. However, even if you're not coming back on Pesach, kal v'chomer if you're coming back during Pesach. However, if you're leaving more than 30 days, then we have a question. If you're leaving more, if you're going to come back during Pesach, you need to do biur chametz regardless of when you leave. But if you're not coming back during Pesach, then you don't have to do the biur chametz. The az de rabba l'tameh. And Rava follows his own shita. elsewhere, he's consistent. The Amar Rava House Beito Otsar Kodem Shloshim Yom and Zak Gluvar Tov Shloshim Yom Zak Gluvar. When it comes to if you turn your home into a storehouse, basically just for storing foods, right? If you did it before 30 days before Chag, then anything in there doesn't need to be burnt. However, if you do it within 30 days, it needs to be burnt. Just to kind of clarify things, Bir Chametz, again, we said is a derabanan because on a deoraita level, you just nullify everything and it's fine. But our main concern is because you're going to come to you know, see it on Pesach, maybe you're going to use it on Pesach, and so we have this concern, we make you burn all the chametz, lest you happen upon it, see it, come to want to eat it, you know, regret nullifying it, whatever it is. However, if you're not going to see it on Pesach because you're not home, it's really not much of a problem. Oh, but if you are home within 30 days, then this rabbinic implementation about burning is already chal on you. You're already in that zone of your halachic requirement to Pesach. So even if you're not coming back on Pesach, we still make you do it. And a further qualification that even if it's before 30 days, even if you turn your home into a storehouse before 30 days, but you have the intention to clear out your storehouse within the time of Pesach, then you still have to do Bir Chametz. However, if you don't have intention to clear it out before Pesach, then you don't have to do the Bir Chametz. Hani Shloshim Yom Ma Yavinitayhu. Okay, what's unique about this 30-day period? Why 30 days? Ketanya Shloshim Midoshim B'Hilchot Pesach Kodem Pesach Shloshim Yom. Right. Well, as we taught in the Braita, that you already start asking and dealing with the matters of Pesach 30 days before Pesach. Right. And this is a matter of Pesach, so this kind of enters into the zone of Pesach halachot. Rameshum Gamliel Amar Shtei Shabbatot. Rameshum Gamliel says that it's two Shabbatot. You just have, it's not 30 days, it's just two Shabbat. My time, and what's the reason? So Rav Shimon Gamliel says you start posking about Pesach matters two Shabbatot beforehand. Now, what's the reason of the Tanakama? Sharei Moshe, Omen Pesach Rishon, Mazir, Pesach Sheni, Shnei Mar, Vayasu Vnei Yisrael, Pesach Moado, Uchtivi, Anashim, Asher, Yutmeim, Lenefesh Adam. Because on Pesach Rishon, which is the 15th of Nisan, Moshe was already talking about Pesach Sheni, right? Which is exactly 1 month, 30 days later, so we see that you're supposed to start talking about the Chag 30 days in advance. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Amar Lach, Aydi Da'ayu, Ribi Mila De Pasach, Amasik Lehu, Kol Mila De Pasach. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, that's not a raya that you deal with Chagim, with Chagim 30 days beforehand. Moshe was talking about Pesach, so we just taught all the laws that pertain to Pesach, and some of those were Pesach Sheni. My time, Rav Shimon Gamliel. Okay, then what is Rav Shimon Gamliel's shita for assuming that it's 2 weeks before? Shari Moshe, Omid Rosh Chodesh, Amasik Lehu, Pesach. Because Moshe tells them we're Korban Pesach on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That's 2 weeks in advance. Shneemar, HaChodesh Hazeh L'Cher Rosh Chodeshim. It says, this month will be the first of months for you. Nisan is the first of your, of the Jewish New Year, in a sense, for the calendar. Uchtiv, and it's written, Dabrug, El Kol Adat Yisrael, Emor, Be'esor L'Chodesh Hazeh V'Ichul Lahem Ish Selah Beit Avot. And that's when, it says, that's when Moshe talks to him about the Korban Pesach. He talks to him about the Korban Pesach by HaChodesh Hazeh L'Chem, which is 2 weeks in advance. Mimad Debreish Yar Chakai. Wait 1 second. Where in when Moshe said HaChodesh Zeh Elchem, Rosh Chodeshim, you assume that he's talking about Rosh Chodesh, Nisan. He's just talking about Nisan. How do you know he's talking about the first day of Nisan, meaning 2 days in advance? Maybe he's talking on the 4th or the 5th, in which case it's not 2 weeks in advance. Ela Amar Rav Rashimi Mishmei Deravina Me'acha. Rather, you can learn it from here. Because it says that Moshe spoke to them in the first month of the second year, which would be Nisan, of year two in the Midbar, Uchtiv, and what is it, what's written there? Vayasu b'nei Yisrael et ha-Pesach v'mo'ado, they should do the Korban Pesach, Hachanami. Right, so that seems to be an indication that he's talking about Korban Pesach on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Hachanami, v'mayad b'reish yarchakai. Really? It said Rosh Chodesh Nisan? It said he was talking during Nisan. Where do you see Rosh Chodesh from? Dilma b'abar b'yarchar b'chamisha b'yarchakai. Maybe he's talking in the 4th or 5th of Nisan, and then it wouldn't be 2 weeks in advance. It just says he's talking about Nisan. It doesn't give a day. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Atia midbar. No, this is how we know it was Rosh Chodesh. But we have Gzeira Shava with midbar. Two times where it says desert. Ktiv hachab midbar Sinai. Ktiv hatam midbar Hashem al Moshe leimor midbar Sinai. But olmeid beechad lechodesh hashini. Right? It says in the second pasuk that this happened on the first day of the second month, and it says in a different pasuk, our pasuk, that he's talking to midbar Sinai. So this Gzeira Shava of midbar, which is used by the first of the month, should be similar to the midbar used by the first month is similar to Midbar used by the second month. In the second month, it's on the first day. So in the first month, it's also on the first day. Malhan Rosh Chodesh, Avkan Rosh Chodesh. They both must be talking about Rosh Chodesh. That is how we know that Moshe spoke about Korban Pesach on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is 2 weeks in advance. V'nichtav Resha Dechodesh Rishon, V'hadav Nichtav Dechodesh Sheni. Well, that's kind of odd, right? Because it says that because we have the information written about the second month first, right? As opposed to the and the first month second. It should have given you the date of the first month, and then we would learn the date from the second month. Amar Rav Manasseh Bar Tachlifa, Mishmei D'Rav, Zod Omer, En Mugdum U'Ucha B'Torah. And so Rav Manasseh Bar Tachlifa says in the name of Rav that, no, we rely on this principle that says there's no absolute binding chronological order in the Torah. So just because one is written, just because the second month is written before the first month is okay, because it is not, because it's not, we're not bound by that chronological order. So it's not a problem for us that this information is being taught to us about different months out of order. Amar Papa lo amran ela betrein yana ava bechad yana mai muktam umai ma'uchar mai demuchar ma'uchar. This principle that we say that we're not bound by a chronological order of the Torah. So we're talking about two different things, two different topics, two different matters. We can assume that just because they're taught out of order does not mean it's not how it happened chronologically. However, if we're talking about one matter, one inyan, like Korban Pesach, let's say, then whatever was taught first was taught first, and whatever was second, right? In which case, this concept of there's no absolute chronological order to the Torah isn't helpful, because both things are talking about Korban Pesach. The ilo temahachi klal uprat ein bichlal elamash uprat dima prat uchlalhu. Because if you don't hold this way, then we run into an issue, because one of the yud gimel midot shatorani dreshabahem that we use to pask in halacha, it's called a klal and a prat. A klal and a prat is like this. You have a general category, like this is the din when it comes to clothing. This is the ruling when it comes to clothing. It can become tamei. And then it'll say something along the lines of a shirt and pants, right? So a general category, clothing, and then it gives you a specific detail, shirt or pants. In the klal of mashiv prat. And so we assume that the din by clothing. So we essentially say that the law that was taught by clothing is really limited to the specific articles of clothing that were taught. So if it comes to pants, and pants weren't taught, well, no, we're limiting clothing to the specific articles that were followed up the general principle. However, a prat uklal is very different. If it first says a general principle, sorry, if it first says a detail, like it says shirt, and then it says clothing, that comes to teach you shirts, yes, but also other things aside from shirts that share properties of shirts, but don't have all properties of shirts. So let's say maybe it wouldn't be pants, but it would be robes, something of the sort. It's a little bit of an overgeneralization, no pun intended, but that's just the understanding we need of these dinim. Now, if we were not bound by order, by what comes first and what comes second in the Torah, even within one topic, then how could you ever have a klal uprat? Because for all you know, it's really a prat uklal. Oh, but the klal came first? Yeah, but there's no order to the Torah. Maybe it's really the prat that we want to see as first. V'tu, furthermore, another problem with Yud Gimel Midot, prat uklal nase klal mosif ala prat, dilma klal upratu, right? Right, and vice versa, right? It's if you have a klal uprat, so maybe it's really a prat uklal, and if you have a prat uklal, maybe it's really a klal uprat. And these are totally different dinim of how you rule here. And what we rely on is the fact that it is the order. If the prat is written first and the klal is written second, it's a prat uklal. If the klal is written first and the prat is written second, then it's a klal uprat, right? So if you're just throwing the order out the window, we really are going to have difficulty paskening halacha here. Ihachi afilu betrei inyan enami. Okay, well, if that's your logic, that it's posing such a big problem for klal uprat and prat uklal, then even with one inyan, even with two matters, it's also a problem, right? Even if you could, there isn't muktam umuuchar, there's no set order when it comes to two matters, still we're going to have this issue. There's no set order, so I confuse the prat and the klal and klal uprat. Hanich lamanda amar klal uprat amruchakin zemize in danin oto b'klal uprat. Okay, well, for the person who says that if you have a klal and a prat that are far away from each other, meaning not in adjacent psukim, we don't regard that as a proper klal or prat, well then we have no problem. Because if it's two inyanim, then you gotta assume that it's gonna be a couple psukim away from each other. At least not in the same pasuk. So they'll never have this problem. Because by two inyanim, you'll never run into the issue, because by two different psukim, or by non-adjacent psukim, you already don't dan klal prat. Shopping. Ela leman damar danin ma'ikel neimer. However, if you do hold that when it comes to a klal prat that can be a couple psukim away from each other, then even if it's two different, even if you have two different inyanim, then even if it's two different inyanim, you still have an issue when it comes to ein mukdam mu'uchar b'torah by two different inyanim, because that can confuse your klal prat and your klal ela. Afil aman damar danin, right? Halaminin b'chad inyana, aval b'trein inyana, ein danin. No. The one, because it's not an issue at all if you hold that you are dan miruchakim, meaning that you could, that you can use a klal prat even not an adjacent psukim. Why? Because the ones who hold that chiddush shita, that you can use a klal prat even when it's not an adjacent psukim, only say that by one inyan, if it's talking about the same topic. If it's talking about two different topics, no one says that you can make a klal prat from non-adjacent psukim. In which case, you only have an issue if you hold that within one inyan, there's allowed to not be order. Right? Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Habodik, Tzarech Shivatel. So after you check for chametz, you got to do a bit of chametz. My time, why? Inem Meshum Perurin Halocha Shive. Right? If you say... So do you say that because so why would you have to be mevatel chametz? Is it because of the crumbs that you didn't burn? Well, if that's the case, they shouldn't be considered significant. They shouldn't be considered important that you have to be mevatel them. B'chitei mekivan deminter luhu agav beite chashive. And if you want to say that, well, no, because they're in your home, they're like still guarded, and so they're considered significant to you. And if you want to say that I have a proof that just because it's in my field, it's just because it's in my possession or guarded by me, it's not chashuv, listen to this. V'chit eima, kivan de minter luhu agav beite chashive. If you want to say that that because it's guarded by the house, it's still considered to be chashuv. V'atanya, then we learn in a braita, sofe te'enim mishamar sedeh u'bipnei anavim. Sofe anavim mishamar sedeh u'bipnei Miksha'ot mipnei midlaut, right? When it comes to the end of the fig harvesting season, right? But you're still guarding your field because of the grapes there. Or it comes to the end of the grape harvesting season, you're still guarding your field because of the cucumbers and gourds there. B'zmach balabai makpid alei nasir mishum gezel. V'chev maser. As long as the balabai is makpid, does not want, or still wants those like remaining last figs, or still wants those remaining last grapes, then it's going to be, taking it would be tantamount to theft, and it would be chayav to in meiser. So much ain a balabai makbid alayim mutar mishum gezel p'turim min meiser. However, if the balabai is not makbid on them, he doesn't particularly care about them, then they're not subject to theft, and they're not chayav in meiser. But that suggests that if someone doesn't really care about them, then even if they're in that possession, it's not significant. So if he's mevatel them, if he doesn't really care about these crumbs, even if it's in his possession, shouldn't be significant enough to constitute a problem. Amar Rava, gzera shemi matze gluski yafe vedate luvayu. The reason why you have to mevatel is because we're concerned that you're going to come to find actually a nice piece of chametz in your possession that you didn't find beforehand, and you're gonna be thinking about it. You might want to eat it. Okay, well then let him just nullify it when he finds it. Right. Well, maybe he finds it once it's already usser, and so it's not really considered in his possession in order to make a bittel, right? Because it's usser. It's like in an usser domain and not really fully in his possession, right? So chametz that's usser is like partially not in your possession. Right, because you don't have the authority to eat it. V'lo matzim mavtila, so you can't be mavtil in that case. D'amar Rabbi Elazar, shnei dvarim einim mishutim shel adam, not avasan ke hakatov kila mishuto. Because there are two things that are not really in your possession, but the pasuk says it's as if it's in your possession. V'elu hen bor mishuto rabim chametz b'sheshavim l'mala. Right, when it comes to a pit in the public domain or chametz 6 hours of the day and beyond, they're not really in your possession. However, the Torah makes you responsible for them. Why not do the bittel in the fourth or fifth hour of the day? Why after the bediga? Well, not really a time of iser, but not yet a time of burning, right? It's not the Bior time, so it's not the time you have to burn it, but it's not really yet Usser, so we're afraid that if we ask you to do it in the fifth hour, this is not a significant hour of the day in terms of your responsibilities to burn the chametz or to stop eating the chametz, in which case you may forget to do it and leave it over into a time that you're not going to be allowed to be mevatel the chametz, right? So for that reason, we don't have you do it in the fifth hour. We're kind of in the middle of this discussion of when theoretically you could otherwise be mevatel the chametz, but we're going to stop here.